Hey everyone, just a reminder that we are recording remotely while we're quarantined, so the sound might be slightly compromised, but hopefully not too bad. Enjoy! Welcome to Feminists Without Mystique, a podcast where we process politics, sex, and the unrelenting fire hose of bullshit in the news through an unapologetically feminist lens. Each week, we begin by venting about the news, go deep on one important issue, call out terrible things happening below the top headlines in a segment called We See You, and then we end with something hopeful. But this is the third week leading up to election 2020. Doing something slightly different, where we kind of have done deep dives into the case for Biden-Harris and comparing their policies, specific policies, with those of Trump's. So we are not going to be doing We See You's this week, although stay tuned for a good thing.
Yes.
But we are... Whew, okay. This is the last episode before the election. And this is the first day of justice, quote unquote, Amy Coney Barrett confirmed onto the Supreme Court with 7 days to go before a major election.
Great.
How are you feeling? I was feeling very graceful last night. I handled it really well. Did really well.
I was very, I was upset. It's like, we knew it was happening, but there's really so much at stake and it's going to be hard to get her out of there if we even can. Yeah. So, but possible. I mean, it's been done once, I think in like 18 something, a Supreme Court justice being impeached, but, we can hope. It's so upsetting. Cause even if we get, you know, presidency and, you know, Senate and House, we still have the Supreme Court and this whole judge situation. So it makes me nervous that we're going to encounter some issues on the road to progress, because, I mean, largely Mitch McConnell, but mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sort of how I've been feeling.
I've had to delete a few tweets that I've drafted and then just been like, what if I ever want to run for public office? I just not post this. But people have been really funny about Mitch McConnell's ailments.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
It really does seem like his evilness is actually starting to like rot him from the inside out, which is fine with me. And someone posted like, has Mitch McConnell been wearing Marvel Logan's ring from Harry Potter?
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, everyone just do a little Google of Mitch McConnell bruising. Take a look at his hands and his face. I have plenty of theories.
Yeah. Like, okay, blood thinners or whatever, but...
Well, like, he's definitely on blood thinners. He had a bypass surgery in 2003, and then he had a fall last... I haven't spent any time on looking at this. Then he had a fall last summer, I believe, where he broke his shoulder. And of course, he had polio as a child. So either he had like a fucking nasty fall, or he's got some major heart, maybe kidney, liver issue. There's something going on with the guy, let's just say. But anyway, I digress.
It's fine. I sent us on that path because it really feels like the embodiment of whatever my worst self is like lingering with some sort of, dare I say, enjoyment and interest, perverse, whatever that is, on like whatever his health problems are, which is...
Yeah, he's hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's caused people to die, you know. I can understand and relate to not wishing him the best, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to send him an edible arrangement.
No.
So, no. Sorry, Mitch. I can't
imagine there's a world in which I would. I just want to spend a couple of minutes on the Amy Coney Barrett thing. Because it does, there have been, as we talked about, so many different moments that feel like they are all-time lows of the... of this administration. And this one is hard because we can look back on the last 20 years, 30 years and see that it's, in some ways, we're victims of our own complacency here. While conservatives were able to kind of rally around the cause of the importance of packing, you know, super conservative, and in some cases, like, actually have been deemed by the American Bar Association unqualified judges to the courts. And that's been happening kind of under, you know, under our noses without, and we were just, this represents the, I think, like, the pinnacle of that. But this is going to be really scary. The House Judiciary GOP tweeted yesterday, Amy Coney Barrett confirmed, happy birthday, Hillary Clinton, which was just like, felt like it was a knife twist.
So unnecessary.
Yeah, just like petty, bullying, immoral of them. Mark Joseph Stern, who writes for Slate, has, he tweets a lot of interesting / terrifying things, but he covers the courts. And he talks about something that Kennedy basically endorsed last night in a really terrible decision, which affects Wisconsin and some other states, but specifically about Wisconsin, where they're not allowing any mail-in ballots that are not received by 8 p.m. on election day to count. That was upheld by the Supreme Court. And I would just note that they're justifying it however they want. They just do whatever they want. But this is a Supreme Court that theoretically cares about the state's rights and the state's ability to do what they want in their state. And here we have Brett Kavanaugh going against that because judicial constraint and all of that state's rights is really only when it serves them. But this decision that Brett Kavanaugh kind of put together is something that John Roberts on the court rejected in an opinion last night because it was a radical piece of, it's like a radical theory that was too extreme, even in Bush v. Gore, which is what he was citing, for, you know, anyone on that court at the time. But it also includes factual errors. And so that's kind of upsetting. And then as I was like reading this article, a piece jumped out at me that Mark Joseph Stern was saying that Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and John Roberts all argued during the contested Bush v. Gore election that ballots arriving late and without postmarks were thought to, because they were thought to benefit Bush, must be counted in Florida. So three people on the Supreme Court currently advocated for Bush and Bush v. Gore, which already is jarring, already very upsetting. They not only argued, like, they were not only a part of Bush's team, but they argued that late ballots without postmarks in Florida must be counted. So it's just, we're dealing with purely partisan stuff on the court. And the only way to balance this is to balance the court with more appointments. So I can only hope that Biden really understands this and he really hears his, like, if he, you know, fingers crossed, wins next week, I want him to hear, and I want every senator, if we get the Senate, to hear Dianne Feinstein and all you, like, moderate people who have been around for forever and are like 87 years old, hear this. This is a moment where the court needs, we need to meet this injustice where they've set the bar, which is extremely high.
Yeah. No, it's infuriating. And, you know, the Kavanaugh thing and the decision there, it's when you think about all the nefarious shit that's been going on with the USPS, with the Postal Service, and then you put in these things that mean, like, even if you vote, let's say you voted a week before the election, it's postmarked that you did that, but there's a postal delay, your ballot's not counted. You know, it's just, it's pretty evil.
They have all the levers of power. I mean, all of the levers of power are in their favor. All the government agencies, the never politicized before post office, and they know that the chaos is something that they can always use to their advantage. And I think that was also kind of what was gross to me. One of the many things about Brett Kavanaugh's decision last night was essentially kind of capitalizing on this idea of chaos, and then for the court to legislate in anticipation of a chaos that hasn't happened yet, but that Trump is the one, you know, stirring it up, because this, and then they lie their whole justification for having Wisconsin, you know, cutting off ballots at 8 p.m. on election night based on this fucking made up chaos that has been generated by the president. I think it was like Dan Pfeiffer and Pod Save America a few months ago said, and this made me feel like better, and I've been, in addition to looking at the early voting numbers, which has been really positive, really good to see, Dan was saying, in terms of, like, he says, like, worry about everything, panic about nothing, but to try not to be too panicked about a widespread, like, voter suppression effort by the Republicans, because while they are doing it and it's all separate, it would be very hard, because if you said, because they're so dumb, they're dumb criminals, like, they're not going to be able to execute sort of a widespread voter suppression effort that's actually savvy. So it's not going to be like a nationwide thing, that it would be very hard for them to pull this off in all the places they need to pull it off to win, or to cheat. So anyway, that's a poorly articulated version of what Dan said, but just thinking about how, because we are 50 separate states and there are 50 separate systems, we have to just trust that there's only so much interference one can get away with.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Should we jump into COVID-19?
Yeah.
I guess so. So in the United States, we've got over 226,000 dead that we know of. Of course, that's more likely than not quite an underreporting, because not all cases are documented. Our testing isn't the best, which we'll get into a little bit. And at least 60% of Americans have at least one underlying condition that makes them more susceptible to COVID-19. And we're peaking again. We're on the rise. In the past week, the average number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 rose by at least 5% in 36 states. And over the past week, the United States reported an average of 69,967 cases, new cases every day, which is the highest week average recorded yet. So we're not out of it. We're gearing up for the third peak. And our rate of deaths is not low, like Trump says. Like, since June, it's 27.2 per 100,000 people in the US die, you know, COVID death rate. Whereas in Italy, the death rate is down to 3.1 per 100,000. So we're not doing well by, like, any measures. And of course, people like to talk about the fact that it has a low fatality rate. But there are, you know, the COVID long haulers, which are people who have symptoms that are either unexplained, or they know the cause to be damage to the kidneys, the brain, the lungs, or the heart, or all, or a combination of the above, from COVID. And people are experiencing, like, pretty severe symptoms. including extreme fatigue, severe headaches, confusion, shortness of breath, loss of sense of smell, muscle aches, chest pain, dizziness, GI issues, and more. And according to one study, we need more. But surveying patients with COVID-19 after they left the hospital, so of course this was only in patients who were hospitalized, but a fourth of them were still having symptoms of COVID months later. Mm-hmm. And 20% of people who get COVID are hospitalized because of it. So if a fourth of them are having these long-term symptoms, like that's not an insignificant number of people. So when you only talk about the fatality rate, it's not really painting the full picture of the impact of this disease on people's lives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah. It's, and it's been, I think, such a, so detrimental to the conversation and to people mm-hmm. understanding the severity, because you think about like just the reductive way that it's been painted as like most people are asymptomatic or like mm-hmm. are just like a little cold. And I almost think it would have been better, although we didn't have the data from the beginning, but to just say, we don't, you know, if the government was saying this is an unknown virus mm-hmm. and we don't yet know the long-term effects, but we know that you can spread it with, you know, you won't know that you might not know you have it. It might be a cold, but the virus wants to survive. You can spread it mm-hmm. wherever you go. And yeah, it just, it's, I think it's frustrating because I think that it wasn't just like stupidity and incompetence. It was like this just broad lack of taking the virus seriously and like just completely undermining it from the beginning, even when it was obviously serious and obviously the unknowns are part of what should have made it something that was treated with extreme care.
Yeah, it's very serious. And when you have, you know, 20% of COVID people who are positive for COVID needing to be hospitalized, you can see across the country, even now, hospitals fill up, ICUs beds fill up, we've run out of staff, like, which means that people aren't going to get the care they need. Some places might need to start and have talked about starting to implement procedures around kind of stopping care for older patients if they're at capacity, kind of prioritizing, like all these medical ethics things that you would learn about in school are having to be applied. So we can't stress our system this way and expect everything to be fine. Like mm-hmm. this narrative that it's no big deal is just so pervasive and so damaging.
Right. And it's like, yeah. We stretch the system, we stretch supply chains, which mm-hmm. is so scary to think about these like global supply chains where the only places that make X, Y, and Z things happen to be in China. Or in one case, I forget what it was, but maybe the nasopharyngeal swabs, or it couldn't have been that, but something really crucial is like only made in Lombardy, Italy, which is like, ooh, when it was in the middle of their major outbreak, like there shouldn't be factories that were immediately like incentivized through like a national defense act, like, you know, as Trump dragged his feet on all of that.
So much foot tracking. Yeah, let's get into Trump's response.
Gladly.
Gladly, gladly. So many missteps along the way that caused so much loss of life. Like he talks about how like it would be so much worse under another president, but I mean, we can look at what he's done and know that is not true. And we know February 7th was the call he had where that was recorded, where he says it's COVID-19's deadly stuff, where he says it's transmitted by air, it's deadlier than the flu. Mm-hmm. And so we know that he knew on February 7th that we know he knew that. And then since then, he said it was a Democratic hoax, you know, downplayed it, lied about it, said it would disappear like a miracle. He was just lying every day. And we know that. And people are not perturbed by that. But if you aren't being truthful about what's going on, people can't protect themselves. And you know, he's responsible for a lot of deaths because of that, because of the way he, like you said, the way he dragged his feet, and didn't put, you know, he hasn't put science at the center of it. Yeah. He barely listens to public health officials. Called Fauci an idiot.
It's one of those things that feels like cliche at this point, like how enraging it is, or just so obvious to say, like, that he's mismanaged this crisis, and it's been both incompetent and malicious, like, at the same time. And but when you really, like, when you look at the timeline, or when you watch, like, the documentary I was telling you about, Alex Gibney did the totally under control, which is taken as a quote from Trump, who said it's totally under control. Taken from his own words. You know, it's one person coming from China. It's going to be fine. And people listen to the president, and they, even when it was him, you know, there's this sense that he couldn't possibly be like this maliciously ignorant. And, you know, the whole time he's kind of patting himself on the back, like he's saying, oh, you know, CDC and my administration are doing a great job. You know, it's going to be fine. And when it gets a little warmer, like, looks like by April, you know, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away. In late February, the 15 cases within a couple of days is going to be going down to close to zero, will be going down, not up. This is a flu. This is like a flu. Again, these are all things in February, late February. It's going to disappear like a miracle. It'll disappear. You know, this is, it's been said many times by people, but this is, the pandemic is something that is actually just science, facts. It's just going to continue to happen regardless of what you say and what the political winds, which way the political winds are blowing. It is going to keep infecting people and killing people until we have a vaccine, and probably far past that. And it just, you can look at the timeline and you can just see, and with the deaths that we're at, how horrendously he's actually handled this entire thing. He came up with a few lines, like letting the cure, we can't let the cure be worse than the problem itself, I think he said on March 22nd. I'm hopeful to have Americans working again by Easter, that beautiful day, Easter. Just not really, this is all before March. I mean, it's sort of hard to think about exactly where, I think it's good to focus on the early stage because he mismanaged it from the beginning, but at every moment, you know, throughout the summer and then in the fall, you know, when he gets fucking slapped with COVID himself and actually had a moment where the nation, not the entire nation, but like a lot of human beings with any shred of empathy, which is, I'm not counting myself in this group at the moment, but like, people would like wish him well and want him to recover. And he actually could have seized on that moment. And it was weirdly could have been a lifeline for him to say, I now realize how serious this is. And I apologize for thinking it was less serious than it is, or for treating it bad. Like he could have really taken a completely different, a pivot based on his own experience, but he didn't. You know, where as we speak, five people in Mike Pence's, you know, staff that we know of have COVID. That's
including his like body man, like the guy like closest to him.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. Yeah, and their super spreader events, him disregarding masks for so long, and kind of to your point about how all, you know, all along he's made mistakes, but at the beginning, people would call it kind of the lost month, because could have gotten ahead of this, could have prevented a lot of the loss of life, a lot of the damages that were caused. For instance, one big thing is testing. Like you need to test because then you can contact trace and control the spread. If you don't know who's sick, you can't stop it from spreading. And the places that have been successful, the countries that have been successful have robust contact tracing. And they had the original COVID tests from the CDC were fucked up. And long story short, there are like three components to the test, N1, N2, and N3 assays. And the third N3 assay wasn't necessary to the test because it just detected any coronavirus being present. It wasn't specific. And so this initial batch, that component didn't work. And it took the Trump administration about a month to approve them using those tests and just disregarding the N3. So it's like they had these tests they could have used if he had approved that, but they were just, like you said, just dragging their feet. They had, in order to procure PPE, they had these volunteers in like their 20s with no experience. They just like put them in a room and told them, figure it out. Just figure it out, which is quite a misstep, obviously. And then of course had states like having to like bid for items because they're like, the federal stockpile is for us. What?
Oh my God.
What?
From Jared Kushner.
Yeah. Real piece of trash. The cushy.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that he thought he could get like the team from Fire Festival together to like find ventilators and buy them on the private market. And I thought that was crazy. One of the guys who was interviewed said, well, in the time that I worked there, we did not procure any PPE or any ventilators. It's just, and they were signing NDAs, which is not standard in like the government. And people point out to we can compare our performance to South Korea because we in South Korea found our first case on the same day in January. And the way that South Korea was able to utilize contact tracing, they masked up and took it very seriously. And they credit the U.S. with their response, their pandemic response, saying that the U.S. has paved the way for medical advances, including inventing the N95 face mask in the 1990s. One of the South Korean doctors said, watching America fail at this and flounder has been very sad. We had a pandemic response. We had a department for pandemic responses in the US government, which Trump defunded. And I believe it was 2018, but you and I talked about that. It was a WeCU from I think our first year. And I remember saying something along the lines of like, well, I hope we don't have a pandemic. Like, so just being like, ugh. And you know, because at the time it felt really offensive and stupid and short-sighted that he would get rid of it, but that's what he does. That's what he does. We're all facing the effects of that. I also felt like it was interesting in this documentary when they were interviewing whistleblowers and other public health officials, because I didn't really put together that what was her name, Nancy Messonnier from the CDC, the one who made that kind of famous, like the turning point where she was basically like, I sat down my kids and told them we'd have to be prepared for a serious interference in our lives. And that really scared a lot of people. And that's when hand sanitizers started flying off the shelves. Mm-hmm. But then she was removed like 1 week later. And there's a broader sort of problem that again, it's like a lot of other problems from the Trump administration exposed in this one crisis, but any people who have independent thought are not loyal to him above all, have like really long respected careers that they would like to keep and credibility that they would like to keep. They just don't stick around long in this administration. Someone, I think, I forget, Politico or Forbes or an article recently was saying like most people who are smart enough to get to a, that high level in their career and in government, they want to stay there because they know that they're able to kind of to exact the type of change that they want or the type of policy making in a very specific and very effective way. That's the peak of people's careers to be in these big decision-making positions. But in the Trump administration, they just go ahead and appoint kind of anyone like that is loyal to him, like HHS Secretary Alex Azar, who's like woefully, you know, inadequate, and Deborah Birx, Mike Pence's kind of like favorite person because she weaves religion into her understanding of public health. It's just, it's really, God, yeah. Imagine like we, imagine what we'll find out after this presidency. Bless you.
I did a little sneaky sneeze. I don't have COVID. I just have allergies. Yeah, it's just missteps every step of the way that led to things being so much worse than they needed to be. And of course, when he advocated using hydroxychloroquine, even though the evidence did not support that, when he advocated injecting bleach, then said he was just kidding, but like people did it. we just, this, yeah, like you said, this pandemic is just the perfect example of everything wrong with Trump as a human being and as a leader, which is many, many things. It's all quite highlighted by that. Is there anything else you want to touch on here before we talk about Biden's plan and science?
No, I think that I always say no and then like have one more thing. But no, I do think that the most effective way to judge Trump's handling of this virus is to just look at the timeline. Just look at what, I mean, look at the timeline, what he was doing, what was happening here, what was happening in South Korea. What, you know, how many times was he golfing this year while like the world burned? You know, he doesn't give a shit about people. It's very clear in the way that he speaks and in his actions and in truly every single thing about him. Like the debate from last week, the perfect thing was like when he made fun of, he was mocking Biden for like empty seats at the table or something. He was like, you speak like a politician, like every seat, empty seat at the table, like come on. It's like, well, that's because there's 220,000 Americans who've died from this virus and there are empty seats at the tables. And hopefully that trauma and the trauma of like for older people too, of not being able to see their kids and their grandkids this, at these holidays coming up. I mean, I hope they can think ahead to that and be casting a vote that reflects kind of, God, I mean, the only other option, Jesus Christ. But yeah.
Yeah. It's an awful situation. Yeah. But I mean, Biden and Harris have a great comprehensive plan that involves, you know, listening to science and that public health decisions should be actually like informed by public health officials, you know, like scientists.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's like a wild idea. Big on testing and tracing, doubling the drive-through sites in the country, which is huge, and investing in at-home tests and instant tests, hiring a bunch of contact tracers, fully using the Defense Production Act so we have more of a supply than a demand of PPE. And actually providing scientifically based guidance, national guidance and resources for schools, for small businesses, for just American citizens, including people are like, oh, Biden's going to shut everything down. I mean, some things do need to be shut down, but he also has a plan to give money to small businesses to cover things like plexiglass and PPE so they can open safely as, you know, as they can, and funding, you know, schools doing the same kind of thing, basically funding it so that businesses can open, schools can open when it's safe and open sooner. Cause Trump hasn't really done anything to make those things safer. He just wants everything to open as they are, which is the worst thing you can do. And of course, also big on making sure he's repeated a few times that he wants the COVID vaccine to be free and available to every American. And he wants to protect high-risk Americans and mask mandates and all kinds of... It's just like a comprehensive plan that makes sense. And, they also speak to the kind of health disparities based on race and systemic racism and, you know, putting resources into communities that have been underfunded historically. And it's a competent public health plan.
Yeah. It's almost like you can look at his plan mm-hmm. and everything that he says to do are things that Trump hasn't done and that seem just so obvious, like mm-hmm. a national mask mandate or the schools thing is guidance for schools on a national level. It continues to be staggering to me that there are no national resources and that teachers yeah. on every level were being left to fend for themselves when this was something that was like, this crisis, you could see coming a mile away. As soon as the pandemic started, as soon as the school started shutting down temporarily, people looked ahead to the fall and thought, oh shit, what are we going to do? And then nothing happened throughout the entire summer. I mean, there's all of this, like, now this is a quote from like big, beautiful plan. I mean, but Biden really has like in the intricacies of his plan, you see someone who's thoughtful, who's using science and evidence to construct a plan that's comprehensive and interdisciplinary in a lot of ways. And it's frustrating that because not all the blame necessarily falls to Trump too. A lot of it falls to the Senate and Mitch McConnell, because as has been pointed out many times, they moved at breakneck speed to confirm, to shove down our throats Amy Coney Barrett as a new Supreme Court justice when they haven't passed any COVID legislation since April or whenever the CARES Act was actually passed, the first one. We have had Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin working together like mm-hmm. the whole summer and into the fall. They've been back and forth about whether it was 1 trillion or 2.2 trillion or whatever and what was going to be included, mm-hmm. you know, and then you have Trump. First, he tanked those talks and said there's going to be nothing before the election. Then he did a hard pivot after the stocks took a dive and said, oh, actually, we should do something. And then Senate. And then what did Mitch McConnell do today? He adjourned the Senate through November 9th. Nothing, no business in the Senate, because they did what they came to do, which is, and all they've done in the Senate for the last fucking month has been mm-hmm. Amy Coney Barrett business and trolling the left in that specific area. And I do hope, and there have been a couple of articles that have made me feel slightly better. It's cold comfort though, that maybe they overplayed their hand, and hopefully in the contrast between what they roused themselves to jam down our throats with this judicial nomination and what they have not been able to fucking do, even though Nancy Pelosi is willing to compromise and Steve Mnuchin's been very involved, Treasury Secretary, like the Senate, Mitch McConnell, that rotting corpse, has no interest in doing anything. They don't care. They're immune to shame. They don't care about the American people. And it's just obvious. You just have to look at what has the Senate done this year? Fucking mm-hmm. nothing. Like, they just didn't want to. They didn't do it because they didn't want to. Yeah. And that has to change. And I think that's there. Hopefully, again, like a lot of our conversations just come right back to like what the fuck needs to happen as soon as we have the reins of power, which is to radically change the levers of government much more accountability. I mean, there should be rules about the senators, about senators actually having to like do their job.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It would be awesome.
I'd love that. I'd live for that.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I mean, on the healthcare front, it's since 2016, it's been, you know, we're going to make a replacement for the Affordable Care Act for Obamacare. It's like, where is it?
Yes.
What have you actually done? It's like Trump had Kayleigh McEnany deliver her quote unquote Trump's healthcare plan, this huge fucking book to 60 Minutes, to the set of 60 Minutes after that interview he stormed out of. And there's not a healthcare plan in it. It's like a mixture of executive orders and congressional initiatives. And on the executive orders front, like, Trump's been touting this like $200 card for prescription drugs he wants to send out, and been touting protecting pre-existing conditions through an executive order. But these executive orders, there's no like legal grounds for actually enacting them. There's no mechanism to implement them. They don't have like important details to actually, so they're just these empty things.
Yeah.
While of course, as you mentioned, there's a lawsuit to overturn the ACA. So it's ridiculous. It's just like, it's all for show. It's a total smoke show. And they've like shortened the enrollment period through the ACA marketplace, and they've withheld subsidies that support low-income people with out-of-pocket costs, which has brought uninsured rates up since 2016. Mm-hmm. Of course, reduced access to reproductive care, and pushed states to implement work requirements for Medicaid beneficiaries, and just Trump and his administration have not done well by the American people in terms of healthcare. It's just empty words and broken promises, and yeah, it's not working.
And he's always saying that it's, you know, he has a plan, and that we're gonna see it, and it's gonna be so much better than Obamacare.
You're beautiful, Maria.
It's a big
beautiful
plan. But he does continue to just, he knocks down arguments by just saying, we have one and you'll see it. You'll see it. It's going to be better than before. You've had 4 years to do it. Mm-hmm. You actually had a like majority in the House and Senate. You didn't do it. Mm-hmm. That was probably one of the main moments of victory for the every person in his in his 4 years in office, is that activism really did work. That, you know, that was, we were protesting, there were people in the every Senate office, and we barely eked that victory out. But now it's all very, very, very much in danger of being undermined in the courts in November with Amy Coney Barrett. So I think, you know, it's dark because I was also listening to a podcast that was talking about where do we go from here in terms of healthcare and reproductive health. And they were speaking as if Roe has already been overturned. Like, that's what the assumption is in these circles, like now and the Yellowhammer Fund in Alabama, that was who they were interviewing. And I try to think about like what's the most sustainable way to absorb it and fight it. And it is clear that some people, just sort of anticipating it and trying to work from a place where they're already assuming that it's going to be banned in their state, and how do they repurpose their one healthcare clinic into something that's like more reproductive health, and then like summon resources to get women to states where it is legal. I think that with the Supreme Court the way it is, and regardless of what happens with Biden and the Senate, we are going to be going through some really, really dark years where hopefully the good thing that comes from it is that I want to use a different word other than like radicalizes, but it wakes people up to the rights that we had and the ones that are up for grabs for women, for the LGBTQ community. Bad.
It's very, very bad.
Sorry, and I'm unfocused today. My mind keeps like immediately darting to looking forward. I am having a hard time staying focused.
No, it's so hard. It's like I think a lot of us humans go through with this shit, like periods where it's all you can think about. And, you know, we're a week from the election, and regardless of what happens with the election, we have ACB for at least now. And the reality of that, I think, still hasn't hit a lot of people. It's huge. It's, it's everything, you know? It's like literally everything. And it's been the scheme these past 4 years, well, beyond this past 4 years, but, you know, the wheels have been turning more quickly the last few years, and this is what we have. And, you know, hopefully we can reverse whatever happens in the next little bit. But it's civil rights. It's incredibly scary to see, to think about what could happen, you know. You know, we'd have more tools with Biden, with a presidency, a House and a Senate, but regardless, if their Supreme Court's the way it is, we're gonna have some hard times, ahead.
Yeah.
But I mean, thankfully Biden has a robust as well, a healthcare plan.
Yeah.
For what that's worth. Wants to expand, basically wants every American to have access to affordable health insurance. Wants to expand eligibility for Medicare and Medicaid, create a new federal health problem of public option. He's not going to do away with private insurance, even though I think we both would prefer that, but he's not. That's been kind of misrepresented here and there because that is something a lot of progressive people want to do, but he doesn't. He wants to basically build on the Affordable Care Act, build on Obamacare, wants to do things like auto-enroll low-income people when they're in public school, SNAP programs, have these various things in place, and also increasing value of tax credits to reduce premiums, which will help middle-class families a lot. Wants to stop surprise billing, which is when healthcare providers charge out-of-network rates, which are incredibly high when the patient doesn't even have control over it. Like when they're hospitalized currently, they just get charged these enormous rates they can't afford. So wants to do away with that, which is big. And various mechanisms to kind of stand up to the prescription drug companies, corporations, and various mechanisms in place to basically lower and limit the prices for drugs and the drug gouging. And also kind of giving consumers more options, Americans more options, allowing them to buy drugs from other countries, and whatnot. And whatnot. Yeah. Basically. And of course, restore funding to Planned Parenthood and as I think I mentioned in the COVID section, wants to increase resources to marginalized communities and to people who historically and currently are discriminated against medically. So all the good things. Basically, like with, you know, Biden, that people can be guaranteed healthcare. What a wild thought.
Yeah.
Wild thought. And it's also just FYI to the world, it's less expensive when you have good, like it becomes less expensive overall when everyone has good healthcare because preventative medicine, you know, you have less of these emergent situations. And it's just a human right. You should be able to see a medical professional when you need to see one, regardless of how much money you make. Because all humans have value.
Yeah.
So it's not like deciding to go out and have like a fancy meal. It's, you know, kind of a requirement here.
Right. And we all make healthcare decisions based on money, and that's based on what we can afford. And that's why preventative care feels in a lot of senses frivolous when you're weighing, well, I could do preventative care or I could pay rent and just wait and see if this is a problem. And then it's like, oh fuck, it's a problem. Yeah. And now it's going to be 10 times more expensive and perhaps plunge you into some sort of medical debt that you aren't going to be able to get out of. Mm-hmm. It's, my God. Like when you look at what the UK does, like with their NHS, and they have like a nurse on staff at all, like you can call a line and speak to a human person, a human mm-hmm. nurse who will walk you through the symptoms and decide if your symptoms require like you to go get checked or, mm-hmm. you know, she can help triage. They can help triage from a phone call, and it's all fucking free. And then you walk to the pharmacy if you need something, you get it. And we were laughing because there was some video of a British guy who was like, sometimes after I go pick up my pharmacy prescription or I have a call with the NHS, I Google what it costs in the US and then I feel better. And it's like, God, that should be the way like things are.
Yeah, absolutely not.
It's common sense.
It is common sense. And yeah, as we said the other weeks, if you just go to joebiden.com and you click on the Joe's Vision section, like, there are all of these plans laid out that include, because that includes sort of the mechanism of action and how to make these things happen, because we want to, you know, paint the picture. But there's thankfully complexity to the plans. And so depending on what you care about, go on over and take a little peeky-weeky. Healthcare-wise, he's also got plans for the opioid crisis, nursing homes and long-term care facilities, which is huge, my God, as well as various things to help with the caregiving and the education workforce around health, which is great. And guns, which I mean...
Yeah,
there's so many huge issues in this country and in this world, but guns are definitely a huge public safety issue. And Biden-Harris administration would ban the manufacture and sale of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, have a buyback program for those that are already in the communities, requiring background checks for all gun sales, closing a bunch of loopholes, including the hate crime loophole. Mm-hmm. And so Biden would enact legislation that would prohibit an individual who's been convicted of a hate crime from purchasing a firearm, which I think is probably a good thing to do.
It's basically a high indicator that you will be someone who's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Also requiring gun owners to safely store their weapons. There are a lot of accidents that happen with children, or, you know, teens who go out and shoot people. Sometimes they get them from the guns from their parents. Wants to, this is big, the task force on online harassment and abuse to focus on the connection between mass shootings, online harassment, extremism, and violence against women, which is fucking huge. Huge problem. And just in general, we'll like dedicate scientific resources and people to the gun violence public health epidemic, accelerate research and so we can get real solutions.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. The closing of these loopholes too, like you said, and the gun show loophole and
Common sense things. And like most Americans are down for common sense gun reform, you know? Like none of these things will, if you're like a hunter, unless you're a hunter who's, you know, committed hate crimes and things like that, you can still go out and, you know, shoot animals if that's what you want to do. It's not, no one's going to take away all your guns.
Yeah. Right. This is the absolute like moderate position that is reasonable and that aligns with the way that most reasonable Americans feel, but with the interference of the NRA and other lobbying groups, even with the most heinous mass shootings that we've had in this country in the last like 10 years, no real legislation has been able to be passed. And I'm hoping that this is going to be one of, again, like, why am I getting ahead of myself? But that this type of legislation, like a big package, would be quote unquote easy. Like in the first 100 days, you just fucking let this sail through if we have the Senate and the House. I mean, yeah. I think about things that would be, that would go down easier. And something like this feels like it would, because the majority of the public, unless you're one of the, I guess the loud vocal minority of actual hate groups who collect firearms and then go storm capitals, like in Michigan, uh-huh. you know, we might have some problems, but hey, with the new legislation, maybe we can actually do something about those problems. Got to start somewhere.
Right. Got to start somewhere. Yeah. And it's, speaking of the old NRA, they gave Trump, $30 million in the first, in his run for office in 2016. Yeah. So just throw right. that out there. I think Trump might have a vested interest in the NRA. I don't know. Trump let gun business, said gun businesses were critical infrastructure during the pandemic so that they could stay open.
Mm-hmm. that's just critical, as Pence being an
critical critical. Yeah, Trump administration loosened regulations on the export of firearms. It reversed an Obama rule that restricted gun purchases by people deemed by the Social Security Administration to be mentally unable to manage their affairs. So before, if you were deemed mentally unable to manage your affairs, Obama says you probably shouldn't get a gun.
Yeah.
You know, have you tried coloring? Have you tried, you know, maybe a different mm-hmm. hobby? But the Trump administration was like, nah, more guns. Let's do that. And of course, Trump's was like, said that we should arm teachers. That's one of his big solution, arming teachers, which teachers don't want, teachers unions don't want, because it's an awful, awful, awful idea. Adding more guns isn't gonna help.
Having guns in any situation will escalate it. If, you know, as a situation escalates, if there is a gun present, mm-hmm. there's such a higher chance that someone gets hurt or killed.
Yeah.
Just,
it's almost like they're designed to hurt and kill people, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost as if.
Italy.
Yeah, it's pretty bonkers. And I mean, at one point in 2019, Trump said that we have tremendous support for common sense, sensible, important background checks, but that never happened. Mm-hmm. Besides for a ban on some bump stock accessories, right. Which is something, there's been nothing. And Trump also kind of mocks Democrats who are trying to tighten regulations around guns. So hasn't done anything great, anything good, even for guns, just bad things.
Yeah, just nothing. I mean, just nothing. Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing. In 2018, after Democrats took control of the House, too, they introduced legislation to expand background checks and more tightly regulate gun sales. And the Trump administration said they'd veto it if it came to his desk. So.
Great.
Lots of just great moves by the old Trump administration. It's really, I mean, if you look at everything that Trump has said and done and not done and everything that, you know, and you look at Biden's plan and even his history, I mean, he hasn't been perfect, but he's been moving in the right direction consistently. Mm-hmm. It's just so obvious, like,
yeah,
the health of Americans is on the ballot. Life and death is on the ballot in so many different ways. And I just want to get with the century that we're in and have access to healthcare for, you know, just everyone as people here. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Have, you know, someone competently deal with the pandemic so that our less people will get sick, less people will die, less people will have these lingering conditions that negatively impact their lives. We can actually start getting back to the things we like to do, maybe in new, different ways for a while. But like if we want to have a decent future, we got to make a lot of big changes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Big changes.
Big, huge.
Big, beautiful changes.
Big, beautiful changes. Oh. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, feel free to compare contrast websites, Joe. And
yeah, check it out.
Because that's a thing that speaks for itself.
Yeah. Yeah, just take a peek around and you will see. We'll see. Do you want to note anything else before we slip into the good thing?
The good thing.
Beautiful thing.
No. I would ask anyone who has any little coping strategies for the next week to send them to us.
Yeah, please.
Let us know how you are dealing with this longest month, longest week. Because I'm having some problems. Also, obviously, if you haven't voted and if you were thinking of mailing it in today is the last day that the USPS, but today is the day that the USPS recommends that you mail it in. Otherwise, they can't guarantee it will arrive by election day. So if you haven't mailed it in and you missed today, get it in ASAP or seriously go drop it in a mailbox, a spot. That's like, because this is going to be one of those ways they try to fuck us, is all that mail. Louis DeJoy is going to be on his bullshit. And just pay attention. If you know a lawyer in your life, let them know that there are, you can go to votesaveamerica.com, but there's a great need for lawyers on election day to be manning phones, to be absorbing calls from voters if they have any problems, to be observers at the polls, because we have to fucking do that too. I mean, this is like going to be a bare knuckle brawl for democracy, and that's not hyperbolic. It's just real. So if you haven't made any calls, think about just signing up for 1 hour of calls. Yeah, it's not fun, but print out a picture of Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz, stick them on your wall, and look at that, and let that rage burn as you make a few calls to those people in Pennsylvania and Florida. God damn.
Yep, gotta get in there. Do what you can. Make it fun. Make it fun.
And if all else fails, you can send food to the polls. So lots of different places, but the one that always comes to mind for me is pizza to the polls. But like, there are ways that you can make this a better experience for a couple of people.
Do something. Yes. And our good thing, you discovered quokkas.
Quokkas! You already knew about it.
I mean, I spend time in particular circles on the internet. I'm into animal stuff. Nothing, not weird. Sounds like, you know, I mean, no shame to anyone for whatever they're in. Anyway.
Yep.
Just, I'm a lifelong animal lover in a normal platonic way. Anyway, you discovered quokkas. It's spelled Quokka. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to Google it, they're beautiful, adorable. They look like they're smiling. They're just, everyone can get behind a good quokka. So
nice.
I'm going to stop digging myself in this weird hole.
Yeah, they are so cute. Just go and like search the hashtag quokka selfie. Sorry, quokka. I keep doing it. I've said quokka all week to myself.
It looks like it's spelled, it looks like it's pronounced quokka.
Quokka selfie on Instagram is a goddamn delight. They look like they're like little furry, like squirrel bears. I don't know. They have like bear ears. It's just, and they have like their faces just like full of awe, wonderment, delight.
Yeah, they're great.
Aw.
Check out the quokkas. Vote. Find out where your ballot box is if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Call people, text people, talk to the awkward acquaintances that you need to. Uh-huh. You know who they are. And
you know who they are.
Well, next week we'll see. We're going to record a day later next week rather than recording on the eve of November 3rd.
for obvious reasons.
For reasons. But yeah, as of November 3rd, Mercury will no longer be in retrograde, which I see it as a hopeful sign.
That's also a crazy thing that you told me before we were recording, which makes sense because it's just been...
It's been.
Yeah. No. So. Mercury, get the fuck out of retrograde. I don't need this. No,
you're always in there.
You're in there. Anytime I'm having an extra emotion.
Yeah. Just cool it up. Just cool it. Cool your jets. So yeah, vote. Make other people vote. And well, not force, but you know, with your words, persuade.
Wrath.
And yeah, Google Quokkas and self-care. Take a couple bubble baths. Just go sit in the tub for a week.
And we'll see you.
We'll see what happens. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.